proposal in the town of Paris for a massive solar panel farm. In sports, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo homered, and the Cubs won for the 10th time in 11 games, beating Miami yesterday 4-1. The White Sox were beaten by the Indians 5-0 in a game that was called after five innings following a rain delay of nearly 2.5 hours. The Brewers were off yesterday. They begin a big series against the Cubs in Chicago this weekend with an afternoon game at 1:20 today. The WGTD forecast now from the National Weather Service. Mostly sunny today, a high of 55. Light winds out of the southeast. Increasing clouds tonight, a low of 38. Tomorrow, partly sunny, a high of 57. Tomorrow night, clouds, a low of 40. For Sunday, a slight chance of rain during the afternoon. Otherwise, a mostly cloudy and cool Mother's Day. Sunday's high, 52. Right now, with sunshine, 45. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is coming up. And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and today is the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. And President Albrecht joins us in a very, very busy time, which includes Gateway's upcoming commencement. And so our very special guest today is the gentleman who's been brought in to be the commencement speaker. And President Albrecht, I know you're really, really excited about this opportunity.
I can't stop smiling. I mean, this is one of my favorite times of the year. It's just an exciting time to be able to honor and recognize the students and their families for the commitment and the journey they've been on. And commencement is always just a big celebration. You've been there, Greg. You know what it's like. And we have a big crowd, and everybody's super proud, and they should be.
And so we will introduce in a moment, more properly, Tracy Crocker, who is going to be the commencement speaker this year. First, I know, President Albrecht, you have a couple of things that you want to talk about, including a grant that Gateway has just received that I know you're very happy about.
And I will do that. But first, I must give a shout out to WGTD and the 91.1 players. Last week, they received some great recognition, first place award for the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. And I want to compliment you, Greg, and Steve, and Dave, and Dave, and the whole team. You do remarkable work on our behalf. And it's just so grateful that the service you provide to our community in many different aspects. But this certainly won the 91.1 players. And this is our public live radio broadcast. It's a play that's produced two or three times a year. And many years ago, not recently, but many years ago, I had a chance to be a part of that team.
And
it was pretty rewarding. So,
yeah.
But yes, apprenticeship, one of the hot topics across the nation. How do we get young people and adults ready for the skilled trades, and how can we enhance the workforce? And Gateway's been involved in apprenticeship for over 100 years, so this is nothing new for us. But what is new are the new skill sets, of course, but also the new areas of apprenticeship. So mechatronics, healthcare, IT, areas in which you don't always think about apprenticeship. Usually we think about electrical trades or construction-related programs, but you know, some of our largest apprenticeship programs here at the college are in the service area. Cosmetology, barbering, those are all apprenticeable trades. And recently, Gateway received a grant from the American Association of Community Colleges to expand our apprenticeship training. So we are really excited to be a part of this national effort to re-engage employers in the value of apprenticeship training. As a result, I was honored to be asked to serve on the National Apprenticeship Advisory Board for America's Community Colleges and continue to learn about what that might mean for our college and how we can take some of the best practices of other colleges around the country to make sure that our students and our community has access to the great education and training that's available.
Excellent. That's such an exciting way to make this whole workplace
challenge work just a little bit better. Right. That's terrific. I know that you want to talk also about a new partner for Gateway, which involves one of the most exciting sectors of the entire economy, namely that of virtual reality.
It is so fun because, you know, it's like something you would be in a science fiction movie at one time, right? And today it's a reality that we all see. And, of course, we're broadcasting from the Inspire Center, which is all around human patient simulation and augmented reality. And virtual reality, you put on 3D glasses, and I'm sure that many of our listeners have probably tried that in the past, and you can ride a roller coaster just by putting glasses on. Well, you can actually study robotics that way, automotive, anatomy. So Gateway has partnered with a company called ZSpace, which is the leading educational provider for virtual reality tools. So we're building a virtual reality lab at the iMed Center. And our first software platform will be in FANUC Robotics. So our students will be able to repair robotics without ever touching a machine. So I'm really excited about that because we want them to get really good at repairing before we actually take a robot apart, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And we're also going to do that in healthcare, and we're going to have some opportunities for especially young people to think about their future and what types of careers would be related to this whole science of IT, virtual and augmented reality, because it's not just a game anymore. It is the way that people are trained, and it's something that I think will be really important for Gateway as we continue to move our programs forward.
So we will be watching carefully to see what exciting things happen between Gateway and ZSpace.
I can't wait to see you in 3D glasses.
Yeah, there you go. I'm looking forward to it, too. Finally, we want to touch on I think our most recent morning show visit together, when we had a couple of talented people joining us who were part of the Smart Ideas, Smart City competition under the auspices of Foxconn. And you have some very exciting news in case any listeners are not aware of this.
Yeah, you know, fortunately, so I had nothing to do with this. But last month we did have Don Heckel on the radio show with Kate Field. And Kate Field is an instructor for Gateway, recently retired in the horticulture department. And both Don and Kate were finalists in the Foxconn Smart City, Smart Future competition, which is the $1 million prize that Foxconn has committed to help bring new ideas to our region. And so right after that radio show, we went to Milwaukee, and the announcement was made. They picked 12 final winners, so each winner received $5,000 and a potential investment in their idea. And Kate Field won one of those awards, so we're so proud of her. Her project, as a reminder, was in the area of aquaponics and horticulture. And so her concept was that we could grow food just with water. And so we've done some demonstration projects on campus. We hope to do more now with her leadership and expertise. And winning this award brings great visibility to that concept. What was really special about the event was Kate was there with her husband and her daughter, and that was pretty emotional. And Kate's, you know, tenure here at Gateway, 30 years as a teacher, and this is kind of the capstone. The year she retires, she wins this big award and is recognized for her leadership and research in this area, hydroponics. And three of those 12 competitive finalists were selected to be automatically admitted into the governor's prize for business planning, and hers was one of them.
Wow.
So she had a double win that night, and it was pretty exciting. So more power to her, and we're excited to look forward to see what that whole science brings to us.
Absolutely. So congratulations once again to Gateway's own Kate Field, who is starting off her retirement in pretty spectacular fashion. So, President Albrecht, tell our listeners about the distinguished gentleman who joins us today on the morning show and how excited you are to have him
here.
We're
in for a real treat. We just learned that Tracy actually did a little radio show when he was back in college, so we're looking forward
He'll
to
tell us how to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I could not be more proud. Every year, I have the distinct honor of selecting our commencement speaker. And all year long, I look for people that have made a commitment to the community, are making a difference in the community, and tied to Gateway in some fashion. Might be through service, might be through a business partnership. And we just really emphasize the values of our community through our commencement address. And it's a little different than maybe what some colleges or universities do, but it's really resonated strongly with our student body. And Tracy's going to bring a really powerful message, I think. And you may recall that a few months ago, we announced our new partnership with BRP in the development of a new program, and I'll touch on that a little bit later in the program. But that's essentially why we wanted Tracy to come to our campus to be a part of our commencement, because I think, as you'll learn in today's show, that he really believes in the work that our students do.
Very good. So, again, Tracy Crocker, president of BRP Marine Group, we are honored to have you with us today.
Well, it's great to be here. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to being part of your commencement ceremony.
So it would be great if you would right off the bat tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, about where you come from and the road that eventually took you to the top of BRP.
Well, I'm going to start it with my Cedar Rapids, Iowa roots, University of Iowa graduate, and spent most of my career in consumer packaged good and as a brand marketer, whatever that is, I'm not certain, but it led me to a lot of different responsibilities, ultimately as a general manager, and then I became president of a company, and I kind of got my land legs under me turning companies around. So that's not anything that is necessarily right for everyone, but in my case, I really enjoyed the challenge, change management, leadership, transformation, and so I've had two or three of those opportunities, and this one is by far and away the most fun. I mean, so it's BRP, which is Bombardier Recreational Products, originally a Quebec company, makes Ski-Doo and Sea-Doo, and so we move people on vehicles in a fun atmosphere, and I have the responsibility of doing that with our BRP Marine, which of course is boats and the iconic Evinrude engine, 110 years, Sturtevant, Wisconsin, born and raised, and so it's really like I say all the time, I make fun, I sell fun, I have fun, and that's a little bit of what we do.
Great philosophy.
So I must give a shout-out to my brother-in-law, who is your biggest fan, Evinrude. I mean, this was opening fishing last weekend, so we were out on the water, and he was so excited that I turned the key and it fired right up. So I'm going to make sure I send him this broadcast. But, Mike, know that today we're celebrating Evinrude, and I really appreciate Tracy's background history. I'm kind of interested in is this your first venue into the Wisconsin market? I mean, these other companies you worked with, were they outside of the state?
I have been literally all over the United States, California, Connecticut, most recently Minnesota, and now Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So this is back to my roots. It's, you know, you put a circle in the kind of the Midwest, and no matter where I'm at, it feels like home.
Love it.
Let's hear a little more about BRP, maybe kind of the history of the company and your role in it. And was this another one of those kind of turnaround stories?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a turnaround, but it's also taking advantage of an opportunity in the industry. And so if you look at the marine industry, it's been pretty much, you know, a boat in 1988 is pretty much what a boat is in 2018. But yet, if you compare that to other industries like the automotive industry, clearly a car is not what it was, you know, is today what it was in 1988. And so there is an expectation by consumers for a different experience, and especially in boating, because boating kind of comes with, you have to have been raised a boater. And so our boaters are getting older, the millennial age is not as apt to want to go out and do that. So there's the challenge. How do you make boating easy, intuitive, non-threatening? And that's exactly what I think the fun of this is we get to take these different brands. We have Evinrude, which you mentioned. We also have one of the best pontoon companies in the world, Manitou, out of Lansing, Michigan, an iconic fishing boat company, Alumacraft. We recently just acquired an Australian company, which is legendary down there, Telewater. And so they have all of these unique boats for, you know, different situations and different water environments. And so my challenge with my team is to bring all that together and create this boating experience. And so we're having fun bringing technology. You know, and you're talking about many of the things that you're doing here, and then integrating that into a boat and all of the things that come with that.
Well, I had a chance to visit BRP, and they have like a showroom area. And in the showroom, there's the history of the outboard motor, which is just absolutely fascinating. And you can see how technology has changed that particular industry, but also how the industry itself has changed. So now more watercraft sports, individual watercrafts, versus the traditional boating, and pontooning is very popular now, and high-speed boating. I mean, the E-Tech engine is real off the charts, all focused on the environment and how we protect the environment, protect water safety. So there's a whole science that goes behind this industry that people just kind of take for granted to get in your boat and go. But, boy, you know, there's so much into putting into the types of designs, the motors, and how do you make sure that you're protecting all of the different aspects of the resources that are out there.
Wow. And then part of what you're talking about then is you want to design boats that are so exciting that even someone who did not grow up a boater wants to become a boater.
Yep.
In this new generation. And some of these new innovations and breakthroughs you think are a real key to making that happen.
Yeah, and we think we have the right people, the right core competency, and now the right brands to bring all that together. So it's a really exciting time for us.
Fantastic.
I remember walking through the Milwaukee airport and seeing a big E-Tech engine right there in the lobby. So you're doing a great job marketing and getting the message out, too. And there's so many great resources in the state of Wisconsin and across the nation, but Wisconsin kind of focuses on tourism and the lakes that we provide, you know, 13, 14,000 lakes. We're always usually about 10,000 or 1,000 ahead of Minnesota, I guess, or that's the competition. But
right.
To leverage that resource, and I know that Governor Evers is very proud of that as well. I thought he just did a shout-out for fishing season last weekend, the opening fishing. But one of the things that I think is always unique about any company is the history of it. And, you know, to be engaged in this industry for 100 years, and I remember reading one of the early stories about, I believe it was Mr. Johnson, that how this whole idea of a boat motor came about. And it's pretty intriguing. If I remember the story right, he was trying to get across the lake to, at that time, meet his girlfriend. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was actually Ole Evinrude.
Ole Evinrude.
And it was. And to be precise, it was 110 years ago today.
Wow.
I'm making the today part up, but it was 110 years ago. And the story goes that his girlfriend, later his wife, Bess, was on the other side, and he went to go get ice cream, and he rowed across. By the time he got the ice cream on the rowboat, it was obviously melted, and history was born. He was from Scandinavia, had a kind of one of these brilliant engineering minds, and was doing things with small engines, small motors. And I'm not certain exactly the sequence of this, but in those early days, he had a Briggs from Briggs & Stratton.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a Harley
from
Harley-Davidson, all within about a two-block area in the downtown 3rd Ward, 5th Ward area. And they all worked for each other or exchanged ideas in some of those early years. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Isn't that fascinating?
An exciting history, too.
There's so much of that happens in this region of the state. You know, the entrepreneurs work together collaboratively to help support new innovations, ideas. They end up with a boat motor and a motorcycle. And, well, that's how Snap-on Tools was involved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Modine Corporation. And they're all focused on that idea of innovation and entrepreneurship. Kind of the smart city 100 years ago, right?
Absolutely. So President Albrecht, tell us what is behind the partnership between Gateway and BRP, and how did that first happen?
Yeah, you know, so it's really interesting because we all receive a lot of information every day, and you have to kind of pick and choose what you're going to read. And I receive quite a bit of information on workforce shortages and what are the types of skills. And about a year and a half ago, I received an article that indicated that there was this huge demand for technicians in the marine industry. And being on Lake Michigan, I always wondered, like, why didn't we have a stronger marine mechanics, marine technician program, and how could we advance that a little bit? We have small engines, and we've done some things around the outside of the industry, but never had a true partnership to understand how we could create career paths in this industry. So I read the article, and I started thinking about it, and it said the closest program was up in Superior at Indian Head Technical College. So I called up there, and I said, well, this is about a six-hour commute if anyone's going to come and work on a boat down here. And we did a little survey and called a lot of the dealerships in the area and repair shops, and they said, yeah, it's still the same here, big demand for it. So fortunately, in a partnership that we have with the Racine County Economic Development Corporation, Jenny Trick, I asked Jenny if she knew of anyone in the area that would be interested in supporting, and she introduced me to Amanda Falvey. And Amanda has been a really strong resource and champion for helping develop the partnership. So Amanda works for Tracy at BRP, introduced me a little bit to the concept of some technical programming that they might have an interest in. We have some faculty involved, and out of that grew this relationship to where now we have a state-of-the-art training facility on the Racine campus. A program has been launched. Students are enrolled, and we're providing skilled technicians for the outboard motor marine industry. And I could not be more proud of how well-established that relationship has grown just over the last several months. And during that process, I had a chance to meet Tracy, and we talked about building a sustaining partnership, including an endowment, a scholarship program for our students, equipment in the laboratory, and some branding for the program. And he's been a great advocate and champion, but I would be remiss if I didn't thank Amanda publicly for her continued support as well.
Very good. So, first of all, I'm curious to know a little more about what these kind of technicians actually do. What kind of a skill set are we talking about? And then maybe hear a little bit about what kind of workforce shortages are we talking about in that field of marine technicians? President Albrecht touched on it being an issue, certainly here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you got to keep in mind over the course of the last 5 years, really led by Evinrude, is the outboard engine's gone from more of a mechanical, hydraulic piece of equipment to a digital electronic. And so you can imagine the sophistication that comes with that. And so the kind of training that we need to give technicians to be able to work on engines like that. On one hand, it's simpler because there's less moving parts. On the other hand, it's more complicated just because of the nature of digital electronics. And so, yeah, it's great to be able to be the leader in that and to be working with Gateway to identify, you know, kind of what that core competency is or that skill set needs to be. And then as part of your second question, it is one of the biggest issues facing the industry is that you have the marine industry in particular continues to be one of the fastest growing. It's already the largest by orders of magnitude versus other outdoor recreation, almost 5-to-1 versus all other outdoor recreation sports. So there's a big demand. And then you've got this new technology. And so, yeah, there is definitely an issue there, and we want to be on the cutting edge of solving it.
So I think it's always fascinating because, so like a car, right, diagnostics technicians, that's where we've moved our automotive program. So we still have great repair techs. They know how to fix things, but you can't fix it until you diagnose it. So we've got to have the computer integration of it. Same thing with the marine industry. So you've got to be able to have a computer interface with it and understand all of the nuances of the sequencing and the coding that goes into the how these machines operate. But in this particular industry, in the marine industry as an example, for people like me and maybe you, Greg, you get like a Saturday to use this thing, right? So it's got to work. It's not like every day you get up and you can take it down and have it fixed and you're going to get a replacement car and you'll be fine. This is like Saturday, everybody's over, I want to get the pontoon out, we turn the key, it better run.
Right.
And if it doesn't, hopefully there's a tech there at the dock on Saturday to fix it for you. So it is a high demand, high skill occupation.
Right. And now these boats are becoming more complex.
Oh, yes.
And so the person who needs to be repairing them needs to be prepared for that.
Yeah, just on that note, Tracy, maybe you can talk a little bit about, so boats now have like GPS systems and like remote control systems, and they can like a driverless car, they can self-park themselves and everything, so you don't have to worry about running into the dock so much anymore.
Wow. Oh yeah, I think the boat of today, this isn't even the boat of the future, is a boat that has a glass cockpit. So you typically, instead of one analog, you know, gauges, you now have two LCD screens that you're looking at. One has GPS and the other one has all of your metrics in terms of what the day might bring, whether you're fishing or weather or entertainment. And there's also this expectation that as you're the night before, you're going to be looking at your phone and there's going to be an app and the app's going to talk to your boat and it's going to tell you, you know, how much gas is in the boat and any other conditions that might need to be taken care of. And you can plan out weather and fishing spots or recreation spots. And then when you get to the boat and you drive up into the marina, the lights automatically go on the boat because it knows that you're there. And then you go out and have this great experience. And the experience, you know, could even be, you know, it's about capturing the experience, as we know. I mean, when you look anytime you're at, when you see at an event, everybody's got their phones up.
Yep, right.
And that's just part of it. It's not going away, is that you want to capture the moment and share it afterwards. And so there are things, you know, like having cameras on the phone, on the boat to be able to do that. And then when you get back and you're back in your car and you've gone home, you want to share it.
Sure.
And you want to make sure that those moments are captured and, you know, to family and friends. And so, yeah, it's going to be, and that's an experience then, right? It's not just the boat, it's the experience that comes with the boat. And then the ability to connect with friends and family on water, there's something unique about humans that really loves that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, even so, you can pick any venue, right? In sports, it's the Bucks experience, right? And the Packer Lambeau Field experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Gateways is called the Gateway Experience. We've talked about it on the show here too. How do we build an identity, a brand, a culture, so people have a sense of place while they're here? And I love this idea too, that in the boating industry, it is exactly that. It's a shared experience. You know, it's okay to go fishing by yourself, but it's a lot more fun when you have your buddies with you and your friends, right? Mm-hmm, or pontooning with your family and all of that. So, but from Tracy's description, it's time for me to upgrade my boat. I can tell that right now.
we're going to have a conversation here a little bit.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, today is the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, and with us is Tracy Crocker, who is president of BRP Marine Group. That's Bombardier Recreation Products, and they are in the boat business, needless to say, and a very important partner for Gateway now. And Tracy Crocker will be the commencement speaker at Gateway's upcoming commencement exercises. So, President Albrecht, maybe you could, although you touched on this earlier, I think you could maybe speak even a little further on the challenge of deciding when it is time to mount a brand new program that is trying to address what amounts to a brand new need in terms of workforce preparation. And what's involved in making decisions like that, and what's involved in the logistics of actually getting it off the ground, and sometimes in a relatively short amount of time.
Well, in this case, getting it on the water, right?
But, But
you're right. So what we do at Gateway is certainly focus first and foremost on the needs of the local community. So I read an article. It seems like it's an issue. Is it really same here? So we had to do some research and find out, and it was. And then we look for the right partner that's going to be able to help us deliver upon that goal that we have of providing a career path, not just a job, but a career path, so that our students can see their future and help be a part of a future that's going to support their families. And and we have so many great, exciting opportunities in Southeast Wisconsin. And this one in particular, you know, the outboard motor marine industry, those are just so prevalent, and the opportunities just not only here, but can take students anywhere in the country if they want to pursue that as a career. But I think what's important is how do we upskill our faculty and make sure that we have the right resources in place. So with Tracy's support and the team over at BRP, our faculty actually visit their campus as well. And I would just say that we have had a partnership in the past on a manufacturing side. So our manufacturing instructors did already work with BRP in the development of some technical skills in production skills, CNC machining, robotics. And that's always been a strong suit for ours, but we didn't have anything in the technician repair side of it. So this is a brand new aspect of that partnership. But what we've experienced with our other partners in this area, as an example, the Snap-on partnership and what we've done in automotive with Fiat Chrysler and others, we know that we've got a knowledge base in this area that can be accelerated, and so the marine industry was a natural connection for that. But I took our instructors going back to school, getting some past practice, and then also partnering with others in our community to get the right resources, tooling, equipment, you know, materials, lab space, and putting all of that together. And that's where Amanda really helped. So she serves on our advisory board, and she continues to share new curriculum resources with us that and training aids that BRP has available for their technicians in the field. And that only gives our students a leg up, so when they go out and work in industry, they have some experience on the equipment, but also on the training structure that's put in place by BRP. Because our goal is to make sure that our students have the right skills so that they can move into that industry sector and elevate their careers as quickly as possible.
Wow. So what kind of timeline are we talking about from the moment the light bulb went on over your head to the moment that we could begin actually offering this?
You know, you'd think sometimes this might take years to do it, but actually within 6 months we had a really strong commitment that we were going to put this together. Took a few months to clean out a lab that we had and kind of transition over, but within the first 12 months we had a program up and running. And so we had to go through the process of writing curriculum and getting it approved by the state and, you know, collecting all the resources and all of that. But in a relatively short amount of time, we were able to begin to address the skilled worker shortage in this particular industry and then build out the recruitment strategy with our high schools. And I can only tell you that it's not just It's not just boat motors we have over there. So we have side-by-sides and Can-Ams in there and just the motorcycles. And our students, when they come through on their tours for middle school and high school, their eyes just light right up going like, you mean I can work on one of these?
Wow.
Yeah, you can.
Wow, very good. So Tracy Crocker, what would be some of the most important enticements for somebody who might be thinking about this as a field and stirred in the midst of your answer, I hope will be a word or two about the money one can make in this field.
Yeah, I think, well, first off, I mentioned, you know, kind of the size of this industry and the fact that even with all of the screen time that we talk about, that there is a flip side of that, which is I want to get out and be part of nature. Even as we get more urbanized, and so it is a great industry to be in as a starting point. I think that, you know, gives us a lot of opportunities to help people, you know, to develop these skills. And what I would say about the training and the skill set itself is how applicable, and the president talked a little bit about it too, in terms of, you know, it's applicable to automotive, and it can move over to other parts and other industries because of kind of the fundamentals of, call it, electronics and digital technology. But we hope we're attracting the best and brightest in our industry. And when you're there, it really does become part of you. It has one of those because it's a lifestyle. And so we're finding that when we get employees in, that we have a really good track record of maintaining them for years to come.
Very good.
I've always found that partnerships like this help keep the brand visible. So it's sort of, if you're not in front of a new student pool, the talent that comes through a Gateway or other colleges, it can be out of sight, out of mind, right? And so how do you keep it present in our community, keep it real visible, keep attracting new talent to it? And that talent with a great experience goes out and tells all of their friends, and of course that's the product they end up buying, and you just continue to build momentum for that. And it's important to celebrate our local companies in that work here at Gateway.
For sure.
And I think one of the things, just to jump in on that goes with our industry, is that certainly we can we have, in a big, more of a corporate setting, lots of opportunities. And you talked about, you know, making more money on the entry level. Wages are very good, and then the opportunity for advancement. But that's not necessarily everybody's profile. And in our network, we have distributors, which we call dealers, and they're small businessmen and women. And if that, for some people, and based on where they're from or their experiences they've had, is a better fit. And then they get to be part of the business. And they, in some ways, have, while equity may not be exactly the right term, but they are rewarded for helping that business grow. And there's nobody more important in a marine dealer than that service technician.
Someone that can tell what's wrong by listening to it.
That's exactly.
So Tracy makes a good point on this, too, because many of our students at Gateway, if you did a survey of any class in any program, how many want to own your own business someday? Easily over 50% raise their hand. So they know they want to be – they want to have a sense of responsibility and create their own future that way. So getting in the industry, gaining those skills, learning those competencies, performing at a high-tech level gives them an opportunity to be a business owner at some point. I'm also fascinated because industries have these types of training programs already. So it wasn't that we had to create something new, because Evinrude and BRP, they have a structure in place through their dealer networks. So traditionally, a person might have an interest. They go get a job at a dealership. The dealer then funds them to go back to school, and it's a little bit longer process. So this changed the dimension a little bit by saying, what if we upfront it and put training at the school so that when they go apply for that dealership, they have some entry-level skills already in hand.
They're already there, yeah.
Yeah, they can move up the ladder much quicker.
That's right, exactly right.
And be of greater service to the dealership right from the start.
Right.
Very good. President Albrecht, this sounds like this probably folds nicely into, I know, one of the most important themes of your presidency, namely Gateway being really aware of advanced manufacturing practices and smart systems. I mean, that's where everything is going, and it sounds like this particular industry is no different.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a direct connect. If you see how these motors are built over in Sturtevant, I mean, this is high-tech manufacturing, right? This is electronics integrated sensing technology on all these motors so that it can tell what's wrong. It can send messages through Bluetooth and, as Tracy mentioned, to a cell phone or to any diagnostics technician that needs to know. It's a computer-integrated model. So whether you're producing the motor itself through a manufacturing process and automation and robotics, or whether you're using it as a consumer, understanding all of the science and technology that goes into it, a technician needs to be able to play both aspects. How is it built? How is it put together? And then what's the issue that the consumer might have so we can do the diagnostics of it? So it is a smart sensor world, and whether it's a boat motor, a car, or an airplane, those are the types of skills that our technicians must have in order to succeed in this industry.
It's interesting, Mr. Krager, you were saying about how in some ways the boating industry lagged behind the advancements that were made in automobiles, which might at a glance seem strange, but I suppose it makes some sense that that advancement has to begin someplace, and it probably makes sense to make sure that it is cost-effective and leads to the advancements that everybody wants, and then it's time to apply those breakthroughs to your own field. Is that kind of how it's unfolded?
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it. I mean, you've got a lot of stakeholders. You've got environmental stakeholders, so there's a new standard in terms of emissions that have to be met, and so you've got to have that folded in. There is a certain part of it that has a global aspect to it, and so you got to be part of a global economy, and you got to think through your way through that. And then, maybe the most pressing is having that that innovation or that technology and making that part of who you are as a company. And that's why we're excited about this relationship, is because, you know, that's not necessarily one person sitting in a lab coming up with one brilliant idea and the world's problems are solved. It's a team. It's a team, and they're sort of building on each other in terms of an idea or something, and you have to have all those skill sets sitting around the table, including technicians who work on the equipment or the motor or the engine. And once you get all of that, really cool things start to happen. I mean, it starts to become this synergy of ideas that can change the industry.
Yeah, so the goal is always to get the ice cream across the lake before it melts, right? So it takes a team in order to do that. But so it's interesting because sometimes it's generational changes that take place. I think if you said boat motor to many people, they would think, oh, yeah, I remember. There's a rope and you pull it and then you
and just, sometimes it starts and sometimes it doesn't.
Right, and you can take the cover off and then you can mess around a little bit with the spark plugs. You cannot do that today. Just like you cannot lift the hood of your car and go in there and change your own oil anymore. I mean, everything is so precise and so electronic driven that you've got to have a computer skill set, a computerized coding skill set in order to be able to analyze what's wrong with the vehicles. And they'll tell you the warranty, don't take the cover off it, right? Because you're going to lose your warranty. So I think Tracy describes it really eloquently that this is a combination of experiences. So you need designers, creative thinkers, programmers, coders, IT specialists, environmental specialists, emissions. All of this has to fit in a component that's going to go on the back of a boat that's going to give everybody the experience that they're looking for. So it's a big process.
Yeah, no small feat. Tracy Krager, it must do your heart good, I should think, to see this new partnership coming into being and all of these exciting advancements happening right here in southeastern Wisconsin, where the history of the company is so deeply rooted.
Yeah, and for a lot of reasons, it seems like all roads lead to southeastern Wisconsin these days.
I love that.
And it creates a competitive atmosphere, and so you got to have a competitive advantage in terms of attracting talent. And this relationship is a great example of how we're going to try to do that. And it's also an opportunity to give back to the community, and so that is again part of how you want to look at the big picture here, and so for us this is a win-win-win.
I think it's fantastic if we can help young people get those family-sustaining jobs. They have a little more income so they can do other things with their families, like spend time out on the water and appreciate the environment, and creates a greater sense of life and support in the region. That's really what it's all about. We often talk about the great assets of southeast Wisconsin and Lake Michigan being one of those, and how do we celebrate that and all of the lakes and streams we have. It's by giving people opportunities to do good things in their job, but then be able to kind of celebrate that in their lives.
So tell us, President Albrecht, about the invitation that you extended for Mr. Crocker to be the commencement speaker. Yeah. What kind of went behind your decision there?
Well, I hope we heard some of that come out today in the program, because it is about values, and it's about how do we help everyone celebrate this experience called life, whether it's through environmental experiences like being on the water, or whether it's through connecting to a passion that they might have in a future career. Because as we all know, we don't want a job, we want a career, and the career is driven by passion, and that passion can lead to great success and opportunities. Many of our students will become super great at being a technician and master techs. Others will own their own business. Others will transfer skills into other areas. And ultimately, when they leave Gateway, we want them to understand that we're here for them at any stage of the life that they're in. And Tracy has just great experience across the nation in helping communities revitalize themselves through work, and is doing that right now with BRP and our home community of Sturtevant. And Gateway's role in helping build that talent with that worker shortage that he's described, we're proud to be able to do that, and we want our families that are at commencement and our students to know that not just Tracy and BRP, but companies all over this region appreciate and value the hard work that they put in and will invest in them as future employees.
So do you know what you're going to say yet? Have you given that very much thought?
Well, President Albrecht and I were talking about that this morning. The answer, in short, is no. I have some ideas that are being worked on, but I think, I look forward to the opportunity. You know, having sat in those seats at one point in time in my life, and to have a different perspective on it, and to kind of share, that how important that moment is, and how, living in that moment is going to be such an important part of the day. Because then it becomes, a springboard for the rest of their life, and I'm anxious to be part of it.
I'm really excited, too. It's always a pleasure to be a part of the ceremony, and as the president of the college, you have certain responsibilities. You can confer the degrees and everything, but there is nothing like shaking the hands of a graduate that's walking across the stage that maybe had not seen themselves in that viewpoint before and now have accomplished a great goal. And so one of the real treats, I think you'll enjoy this, Tracy, is that you will get to do that. And so I would just say bring some cloths along, because their hands are pretty sweaty when they come across the stage.
I look forward to it.
But it's quite an emotional experience, so we're really proud to have you with us.
Absolutely. So again, Tracy Crocker, president of BRP Marine Group, will be the speaker at this next week's Gateway commencement exercise. And it's been great to meet you today. And we appreciate all that you do for the community and for Gateway. And thank you for being part of today's morning show. It was great to talk with you.
Thank you for having me this morning.
And President Brian Albrecht, as always, thank you so much as well, and best wishes to you.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm Greg Reberg. To finish out today's morning show, I'm going to play for you a brief excerpt from an interview which will air in its entirety a week from today. It's an interview with Joshua A. Douglas, professor at the University of Kentucky College of Law, the author of a really interesting book called Vote for Us, How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. It is the contention of Professor Douglas that one of the things we need to do is to do much better at making sure that everybody who is eligible to vote is able to vote. And he also spells out efforts which have taken place all across the country towards that goal, and also talks about various movements to actually expand the voting rolls, including dropping the voting age, minimum voting age, and also certain places where the possibility of changing laws of disenfranchisement are being changed and or challenged. At one point in the book, Vote for Us, Joshua Douglas explores the work of some Wisconsinites on this very important issue, including a former Miss Wisconsin.
Yeah, so Molly McGrath spent time on the ground in Wisconsin during the 2016 election season, putting IDs into people's hands. She was working with this organization called Vote Riders. And the basic theory is that, you know, voter ID laws, again, don't have any fraud-reducing benefit, but they do cut people out of the process. You know, voter ID laws only root out in-person impersonation, which simply doesn't happen. But they're here to stay. People tend to like them. They have public support. And so if voter ID laws are going to exist, let's find a way to make sure they don't have a disenfranchising effect. So Molly and her group, Vote Riders, you know, work in places like Madison and Milwaukee to bring people to DMVs who otherwise wouldn't have transportation, to help obtain the underlying documentation they might need, like a birth certificate from out of state, to wade through the process for individuals. A court found that about 10% of Wisconsin citizens didn't have an ID that would qualify under the law. That's a sizable number of people. You know, many of your listeners probably have an ID in their wallets, but many don't, or at least there are a lot of people in Wisconsin that don't. And so Molly and Vote Riders worked really hard to put IDs into the hands of as many people as possible. Scott Doyle, the other person you mentioned, was an engineer by trade, and towards the end of his career, he decided to enter public service and join the county clerk's office in Larimer County, Colorado. And he heard about some voters on Election Day 2000 who were turned away because they went to their wrong polling place. And he said, there's got to be a better way to do this. You know, why can't I vote just like I go food shopping? I go to the closest supermarket wherever I happen to be. And so he came up with a model known as vote centers, where instead of having to go to a home-based precinct, you can go to any vote center in the county, whether it's closer to your work, closer to your school. And they're all connected so that once you check in at one vote center, you can't check in at another. And the ballot that is printed for you is a ballot for your home address. But just imagine the convenience of this. Instead of having to travel across town, you can go to any vote center that is closest to you. This also reduced costs. You need fewer vote centers, fewer poll workers to work them. And so he implemented this model. Turnout went up. The voters loved it. And now it's spread to a whole bunch of other places, including, you know, places like Houston just said they were going to adopt it. Kansas's governor just indicated that counties in Kansas can use vote centers. Indiana has a bunch of vote centers. So this model really works to help improve turnout.
Fascinating. In our last couple of minutes, we're going to make another local connection. You devote a chapter to how this matter is often not discussed fairly or clearly or accurately in certain media outlets. And you give some suggestions on how people with concerns about this can, in your words, combat fake news over this issue. And in talking about this, you cite the work of a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter named Patrick Marley. Say a quick word about his work.
Yeah, Patrick Marley is a great reporter. I had such a great time interviewing him because he's really educating Wisconsin voters on all the intricacies of Wisconsin's election law, including the voter ID law that we just talked about. You know, there are a lot of hoops to jump through for some people. And Patrick, you know, really laid this out very nicely and cleanly for Wisconsin voters. And my solution, by and large, to combat fake news is to trust local journalists, and therefore to support them with our dollars. You know, we don't as a society spend enough money on subscribing to our local papers anymore. But it's people like Patrick Marley who are doing this great work to provide transparency and to provide education. You know, people think the media is biased. Maybe that's true when we talk about some of the national news organizations on TV and kind of everyone knows what their skews are. But I have the fortune of speaking with a lot of local reporters like Patrick Marley. I first got to know him because he interviewed me for some of his stories as he was trying to learn as much as he can about the elections process. And, you know, they're not biased. They're just trying to do a good job of education, and we really need to support them.
Joshua A. Douglas, again, is a professor at the University of Kentucky College of Law and the author of this really interesting book called Vote for Us, How to Take Back Our Elections and Change the Future of Voting. We will be playing this interview in its entirety 1 week from today on The Morning Show. On Monday's program, you will hear the exciting new interview that I just recorded with Betsy Aide. She's Kenosha's own, and she's been competing on The Voice on NBC. As you perhaps know, her time on that show has come to an end, and that means now she's a little freer to talk about the experience. And so our conversation will be airing tomorrow on The Morning Show. Kenosha's singer Betsy Aide on Monday's Morning Show just after 8. On Tuesday, we'll have Jack Rose from the local chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. On Wednesday, James Kinchin from UW Parkside talking about an exciting project they have in which one of his choirs is joining forces with a choir